The rituals of the Armageddon are being enacted by the global elite, and it's high time we wrap our minds around what these losers think they can achieve, and better yet, why. They think they can bring about the end times. In this two-part special series, we're going to review the study of eschatology and how the occult have always been pushing us towards the apocalypse. From Solomon's First Temple to Freemasons' Hiram Abiff, we'll look at the occult magic of rebuilding the temple with characters like the Knights Templar, John Dee, King Cyrus, and Donald Trump. We'll look at the implications of war in Iran and how it could lead to global economic collapse via the Strait of Hormuz. We'll also get into the evidence of the coordinated agenda through the Heritage Foundation from Project 2025 and Project Esther. We'll talk about the biblical history of Esther, and we'll connect all of these dots into Jeffrey Epstein. The conversation will go deeper into Kabbalistic beliefs, false flags, Greater Israel Project, the Gog and Magog spiritual war, and the key players involved in manifesting all of this. So join me here on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture as we reveal the big picture and prepare you spiritually for what is coming. That's right. Cup of coffee in the big time, folks. Part one. We're going to start this series, this special two-parter. Part one today. We're going to cover the rituals of Solomon's Temple, Freemasons Hiram Abiff, as well as the occult magic of rebuilding that temple with all those characters that we talked about earlier. We're going to unpack World War III, the implication of how the war in Iran and how it could lead to global economic collapse. We're going to discuss the evidence of the coordinated agenda through the Heritage Foundation, through all these various projects that everyone said, oh, I have no idea. Oh, I've never heard of that. And everyone, by everyone, I mean Trump. The biblical history of Esther and how all of this connects together. And then come back next week, because in part two, we're going to go deeper. We're going to look into the Kabbalistic side of Esther. Purim, false flags, the Greater Israel Project, Sabbatai Zvi, Jacob Frank's connections into the secret societies that made all of this stuff happen with eschatology and these wars of the Antichrist. And we'll look at the players coordinating all these events and how I believe that they're doing it. Peter Thiel, Pete Hegseth, old BB, and Donald Trump himself, of course. Now, before we start, I have to provide a disclaimer that my professional legal team has provided me. The views expressed on this show are for entertainment and educational purposes only. I analyze symbols, myths, and narratives in pop culture and current events. I do not advocate for discrimination against any religion, ethnicity, or group of people. Any discussion of religious texts, ethnic groups, or political movements is purely analytical. And to prove myself further, I've got a list of Jewish people that I love dearly. Stanley Kubrick, got him tattooed on my arm. Drake, and I look, there's problematic people on this list, but I don't care. I stand by it. Drake's the GOAT. Bernie Sanders, Jake Gyllenhaal, Louis C.K., John Stewart, Pee Wee Herman, Howard Stern, Hillel Slovak from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Ramones, and the Beastie Boys, and many more. Okay? So I need you to know, we're not doing this on some hater stuff. We're doing this from an analytical perspective, all right? And I'm definitely 100% not saying all of the Jewish people are involved in this at all. I'm saying it's like saying that all Americans are on the Epstein list or supportive of that. It's a cabal of these psychopaths that have crazy ideas in their head and they're possessed by demons. Okay? I'll be crystal clear about that. I want you to know that. All right? I also need you to know I'm recording this part one on March 24th because I've got a busy schedule the next couple of months. So you're not going to see this episode till March 30th or 31st. So in case the world ended, whoops, guess I was wrong. And that'll make sense when we wrap up part two. So none of this matters. without further ado, let's start by framing this special series. Are we experiencing the end times? Is this Armageddon? Is this the apocalypse? Armageddon described as the last battle between good and evil before the end of the world. The apocalypse, defined as the revelation or the final destruction of the world. I believe we're headed towards both. I believe that the psychopaths wanted that digital matrix. They want that AI God. They're accelerating us into this. I talked about this at length in the Dark Enlightenment series in January 2025. And nothing's changed. Do you remember a guy named Max Azzarello? Remember the guy, Max, set himself on fire outside of the Trump hush money trial only 2 years ago, by the way. I know that seemed like a decade ago. April 19th, 2024. I reviewed his manifesto. I said, what was that guy talking about? You know, so much changes, and this is flooding the zone tactics. They hit us with so much stuff that you can't keep track, and by the time you wrap your head around one thing, another thing's happening. There's alien disclosure. Oh, there's World War III. Oh, all the while, they're still messing with the kids on Epstein Island. Not one arrest. Not one. Not one arrest. They're eating kids. Not one arrest. Anyway, Max Azzarello, and I get why. Now I get it. I get why he lit himself on fire. I feel that way now. This is what he said in his manifesto, and I quote, "We are victims of a totalitarian con, and our own government, along with many of their allies," pay attention to that word, allies, huh? "is about to hit us with an apocalyptic fascist world coup." This is exactly what I was talking about with the Dark Enlightenment. My man was on it. Now, back when this event happened, I interviewed James McMahon, my wonderful sponsor for the show for so many years, copymycrypto.com/Isaac, ISAAC, and you get in for a buck. It's ending money worries for so many. It may just do the same for you. You know, that guy. I interviewed James back in May of 24, and he talked about it because we were talking about crypto investments because Max was talking about crypto being part of some massive Ponzi scheme through which the global elites will destroy the world that we know. All right. And Max's manifesto tells us, look, everything's a lie. And he said, if you look into this, you're going to find the scariest and stupidest story in world history. I don't think I gave this guy enough time of day. I think there was too much going on at the time. And I think I should have done a whole deep dive into this guy. He was ahead of his time. And he starts telling the story about how this all started with Peter Thiel doing a bank run on Silicon Valley Bank as part of this cryptocurrency multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme. And he was saying that, look, this is some kind of money laundering scheme that ends with total collapse and the elites walking off unfazed and the rest of us zombie apocalypse. And he says both parties are in on it, right? Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Epstein, the Clinton Global Initiative, Kushner, Scaramucci, names them specifically. And he says that both parties are in bed with each other and that Harvard is a hub for this organized crime front, which at the time didn't seem that big of a deal. But now, re-looking at Epstein, and I'm like, oh, because Epstein was very cozy with Harvard. He had his own private office there for 9 years after his conviction, by the way. And his point, summarized, is that we are in a totalitarian doomsday cult. That was his exact words, a totalitarian doomsday cult. And he was so right. I believe him 100%. It's not a lot of conspiracies. I'm like, yeah, 100%, I'm shoving all the chips in on that. I believe that one. All right. Now, back in 2023... Back in 23, I told you this was going to happen. I've got exact notes from an episode I did about Trump being the false messiah. This was in 23. This was before Max Azzarello. This was before the assassination attempt, quote unquote. This is before the new election, which was possibly rigged. And I say that because him and Elon have been saying it out loud. And Steve Bannon, like, they're all, we're going to prison. We're going to go to prison if we don't make it in. And this is before the Dow hit 50,000, which it slid off by about 10% already. Because recall, the evangelicals were supporting Trump. And I was very critical about how the man espouses zero Christian values. But they didn't care. They viewed him as the imperfect vessel, compared to King Cyrus, who liberated the Jews from Babylon, right? And why was King Cyrus doing that? King Cyrus wasn't Jewish. He was Persian. They didn't even believe in the same God. Because it's a means to an end. And what's the end? The apocalypse. That's why they're kind of okay with some things that are weird, right? That's why the evangelicals, they kind of like the bad boys. They're a little smitten with Trump, right? Because they're embracing this idea of the end of the world, and they think they're going to get raptured up, which is not a Christian teaching, by the way. It was made up in the 1800s by John Nelson Darby. It's called dispensationalism. Look into it. It's completely fabricated. So, yes, Kirk Cameron was lying to you in the Left Behind series. They think that they're going to make God come back, and they'll get rewarded and raptured up to heaven while the rest of us suffer under the Antichrist. But they're not the first to believe this. This goes back into the realm of the occult through John Dee. Remember that? We talked about Jason Louv's book. And John Dee expressed this very well. I'm going to read you from Jason Louv's book on John Dee. If Hermetic magic was concerned with repairing the fallen nature of the individual alchemist, its ultimate goal, at least as expressed by Dee, was the repair of the fallen nature of the entire world by catalyzing the second coming of Christ. For Dee and many to follow him, it was thought necessary to help this to occur through enlightened human activity, the great work. Indeed, the second half of Dee's life was consumed by following the dictates of impatient angels intent on using human agents to advance history towards the apocalypse. Which explains why the news and the politicians and all these weirdos and occultists and accelerationists and dark enlightenment nerds, they're all trying to make this happen. It's a mass ritual. This is the great work of the occultists, all right? So when I say these nerds are going to kill us, that's what I mean, right? They're okay with it. They're okay with the end of the world. Spoiler alert, though, I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't going to happen. I'm telling you it ain't going to happen. I'm telling you right now. I'm going to tell you what the end result of all this research I put into this. This is weeks of research, by the way. Because why? Because God doesn't operate like this, and these people are fools, all right? So how do we start going down this path of understanding what's going on? And at least understanding why they're trying to do this, because it doesn't make sense to us, right? And it was all good just a week ago. Not really. But back in February, you'll recall, before America and its greatest ally started the holy war in Iran, demonstrators in Iran were burning a giant bull effigy of Baal or Moloch as a rejection of the Western world, which we saw. On this bull, they put images of the Star of David, 666, Trump, right? BB. And what prompted this was the release of the Epstein files, which proved the Western elites are a cabal of satanic pedos and possibly shapeshifters. All right. So Iran was publicly protesting this. And then, you know, a week or two later, bombs over Baghdad, right? They're dropping bombs on Iran. What do you think that's about? Isn't that interesting? Also, spoiler alert, the reason we're doing this entirely is the Operation Epstein Fury, right? It's all distraction to try to get us to stop talking about Epstein. And it works. It works. An article on IranINTL.com says that this demonstration where they were burning this stuff with the Baal and the Moloch was believed to be linked with Massaf Institute with a propagandist named Ali Akbar Rafipour. Yeah. And apparently the Iranian groups have been spreading theories about America's greatest ally contacting Kabbalistic demons, which sounds kind of crazy until you listen to my Dark Enlightenment series and you hear about Nick Land and the CCRU doing the exact same thing, making contact with Kabbalistic demons. All right. And of course it's all connected because Dark Enlightenment is an accelerationist movement. What do you think they're accelerating towards? It's the same thing. Collapse. Armageddon. apocalypse. Now, in 23, I was heavy into this talk, right? And I did a two-parter back then on the apocalypse, end times, and the occult, which is very relevant to what we're going to talk about over these next two episodes. So I want to take a brief 5 to 10 minutes, and I will recap to you everything I talked about for those 2-3 hours, all right? The important aspects of this. Because what we did was we looked at the occult history of eschatology, which is the study of the end of the world, and some of the key players involved, right? We had Solomon, we had Solomon's first temple getting built, Freemasonry's Hiram Abiff, the architect of Solomon's first temple, magic, the Goetia to control demons, the Knights Templar, John Dee, and so on, right? And we talked a little bit about the Knights Templar and their goat with bobs worship, the Freemason Albert Pike and Trump and all this other stuff, right? So what we talked about was, you know, we define eschatology as the final destiny of mankind, the highest order of our place in the universe. And it's a fancy word for the end of the world, right? Many religions and doomsday cults have obsessed over this. And we're going to focus in on the occult path, all right? And it starts with King Solomon, which was King David's son. King David, of course, king of Israel. He turns over the kingdom to his horny son, Solomon. He's like, all right, Solomon, you're going to build the temple, which is going to house the Ark of the Covenant. And then after Solomon, a Nepo baby, Rehoboam, took over after and ran it into the ground, as Nepo babies do. Rehoboam, also fun fact, part of Westworld, the TV series. It's the AI overlord in the TV series. So the nation of Israel there, it splits into Judah in the south, where Jerusalem was, and Israel in the north, all right? Then King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon destroys the temple at 586 BC. Around 80 years later, the Persian King Cyrus, the guy I talked about earlier, let the Jews go back home to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple, which they did. The second temple was called Herod's Temple, and that one lasted maybe 500 years, and it wasn't until 70 AD when the Roman Empire destroyed it, right? So it was around during the time of Christ. That's why Christ went into the temple and was flipping the tables. He was like, why are you guys trying to... It was the equivalent of like selling t-shirts outside the concert, right? He's like, what are you doing? This is a place of worship. Quit selling, trying to make money off my people, right? And this was all done at the Temple Mount, aka Mount Moriah. And this is important in the history of the Bible because, or the Torah, I guess, where Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac until God was like, all right, Abraham, I see you went for the knife and you were about to catch a body, but that was a test and you passed, so you don't have to do it. All right. And it was all about setting up bloodlines of the land from which his people will, you know, hang out. This is also the place where Jacob had the dream about the stairway to heaven. And we talked about how important this is in the ascension rituals, particularly in Under the Silver Lake, the film analysis I did, where we talked about Peter Levenda's Stairway to Heaven book. We talked about, because the Jacob's Ladder is very similar to Osiris seeing the ladder to go into the heavens, all right? I've been watching too much Professor Yang. Okay, you see, it's a ladder going to heaven, okay? So then another thing happened, and an angel or an alien visited David and said, look, you're going to build the temple here. That's why he told his son, Solomon, get to building. All right. King Solomon, when he built the temple, used magic. He used a seal or a ring to control demonic spirits to build this temple. He would use magic spells to basically control 72 demonic spirits that were alleged to have been given to him by Archangel Michael. Supposedly Archangel Michael gave Solomon this ring from God. And if you're a Twin Peaks fan, which I know you are because you listen to me, you're already thinking, whoa, wait a minute. That sounds familiar. Right? And what's the name of the man from another place? What was the actor's name? Michael. Huh? Kind of weird. So we talked about the, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, I did a 55 episode series called Twin Peaks Grey Lodge, where we overanalyzed the Twin Peaks show, books, and everything. We talked about how it connects into Solomon and the different spirits that he controlled and all this stuff, right? It's available on my Patreon, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Okay. Now listen, we talked about the Lesser Key of Solomon and the Grimoire with the spells used to control the demons. At some point, the Freemasons get involved. It might be allegory. Either way, the master builder of the temple is supposedly Hiram Abiff, which is where the Freemasons get their origin story. Hiram allegedly killed inside of the temple by three hoodlums, because the three hoodlums go up and they're like, "Give me the secret password, fool." And he was like, "I'm not telling you no secrets. I took that vow of silence." And they're like, "We want the secrets of the master mason." And he was like, "No, fool." So they bash him in the head with a hammer. Which also connects into my film analysis we just did on the movie Him. Jordan Peele movie. So anyway, this temple gets built and torn down, built. So it's been built twice now. And all these religious groups think that when they rebuild the temple a third time, that's when the Messiah comes. Or the Antichrist, depending on who you talk to. Now, the Jewish people, they think that it's the final age where their Messiah, the Mashiach, will usher in this reign of the new universal age of peace and this new world order that they'll control everything or whatever. The Christian, the dispensationalist Christians, I should say, believe it's going to, when you build the third temple, this will trigger the return of Christ, who will then reign for 1,000 years. When Christ comes back, there's going to be 7 years of the Great Tribulation, and this is going to be the rapture where they get to check out and the rest of us suffer, I guess. Like I said, no, it's all nonsense. All right. Now, part of this process includes an Antichrist, and this will be a political leader who will make a peace covenant with Israel. Now, if you've been paying attention, Trump has this Institute of Peace that we're going to talk about in part two. Well, this covenant's going to happen, and then it's going to get broken, and then there's going to be a desecration of the temple. And from here, it's going to be a nightmare scenario of wars and plagues, and which sounds pretty bad, right? Unless you get raptured up, and it's like, hey, you know, a little bonus prize for being a Christian. And what's crazy is the evangelical Christians believe, it's weird, the evangelical Christians and the Jews, some Jews, I should say, because it's not all of them, right? Not all of them are into all this crazy stuff. These folks think that they're going to force the return of Christ after they rebuild the temple. The evangelicals are like, cool, when Christ comes, these Jews are going to see the error in their ways and they will convert and recognize him as Messiah. All good. The Jews think, no, the Messiah's coming and he's about to break you fools off some. And then you got like people like the Mormons that think part of this reign will be during this whole process, Christ is going to take a throne at one of their LDS temples in Missouri, which is also where they believe the Garden of Eden happened. You know, all kinds of different opinions about this. All based on a completely made up fiction Left Behind series, all of this made up, right? None of this is real. I just want to reemphasize that for people getting anxiety about this. None of this is going to happen. I'm telling you right now. And look, I've got two options here. When I go on a limb and I say, none of this is going to happen, I'm sure of that. Either I'm right and you can say, boy, Isaac was right. I'm glad that he made me not feel so scared when all these psychopaths are trying to do this crazy stuff. Or I'm wrong. And all this happens and none of this matters anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a win-win for me, to be honest, but no, for real though, I don't believe any of this is going to happen at all. These are all fantasies, just like John Dee, right? 500-600 years ago, John Dee thought he was going to bring in the end times. Every person in history is like, we're going to bring the end times. Crowley and Parsons and John Dee, like all these people, all right? And at the root of all these fantasies is Kabbalah. And if you want to get nerdy about it, which we're going to do that in part two, Jason Louv in his book talks about the world's great restoration. from 1621, a book by Sir Henry Finch, which he says was inspired by Kabbalah.
Right.
And the whole book was about the return to Palestine to start the apocalypse. And like I said, John Dee and Edward Kelly also told by the angels to complete their great work by ushering in the apocalypse. These angels were like, okay, we need you to drop pipe on each other's old lady. And Edward Kelly was like, bet. Because Edward Kelly was kind of like a deviant. He was like, hell yeah, let's do this. John Dee, he was kind of a nice guy. He was like, okay. But then he couldn't get it up. Couldn't get it done. Sad stories. So Blavatsky, Helena Blavatsky from Theosophy, she talked about this too. She was like, the end times, the Maitreya God's going to come here and evolve mankind into the age of peace. Right. And you see a lot of like UFO type circles of folks that also think something big is going to happen here and the aliens are going to come save us. The angels are going to save us from ourselves. My man, Ryan Bledsoe, I just interviewed him a couple weeks ago. That's kind of what his understanding is of what the angels told him or his father, I should say, Chris.
All right.
Now, Crowley was part of this, too. Crowley raised a dispensationalist Christian. He was trying to bring about the end times through the dark side of things, though, okay? As was Jack Parsons, who tried to incarnate the moon child, proclaimed himself the Antichrist. And whatever, was it Liber 49, I think, is the book that he wrote, saying, oh, I'm the Antichrist, and this is the end of the world, and, Age of Horus. And then it was only after the Christians got on board with all this stuff, we got things like the Balfour Declaration and the creation of the State of Israel in 1948. By the way, predicted by alchemist Isaac Newton to the exact year, apparently. He knew exactly the year, which is kind of crazy. And in a way, all of the World War II events were supposedly either capitalized by, depending on who you look, I mean, this gets very controversial, as you could imagine. Let's just say that after World War II is when the nation of Israel was stood up. Okay. And then you got all these mega evangelical churches. You've got QAnon, you got MAGA, all part of the same system, right? Because they think they'll receive blessings from God for helping out. Or even worse, they think if they don't support all of this, that they're going to be left behind. That's what that book series is about, is being left behind and seeing the nightmares that unfold. Like little Mike Seaver warned all of us, okay? Also, to keep talking about occultists that think, oh, it's the end times, time to, we're going to do things. Traditionalism, right? Which we talked about with Steve Bannon and with Professor Teitelbaum. With, you know, that's Putin's right-hand man, Alexander Dugin, and Steve Bannon, which is Trump's right-hand man, and Epstein's right-hand man. They all talked about this Kali Yuga end times. And they're, again, ushering the new age, and oh, here we go. Everyone thinks they're going to, it's like that Tears for Fear song, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. A song featured on Donnie Darko, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, one of my favorite actors. Probably my third favorite. In fact, I had a great, great comment request somewhere where someone said, you need to do a top 10 actors, Isaac. You love a nice top 10 countdown. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that on Breaking Social Norms because that's a little, because like I try to make occult symbolism of pop culture more of the research based variety show. And Breaking Social Norms is a little different, right? It's a little informal. It's a little more funsy. It's a little more, let's talk top 80s movies, top horny movies, top actors. Like that's where that goes. All right. So if you haven't checked out my other show, Breaking Social Norms, have I got a treat for you. You're going to love it or hate it. I promise you that. but that's where we're going to do it sometime here. I'm building up my top 10. Jake Gyllenhaal, where does he sit? I mean, you know who my number one is. I mean, that's no fun. You know who my number two is already. We got Leo at number one. Leo DiCaprio, of course. Tom Cruise at number two. Locked in. Of course, that's where that's going to go. Where does Jake Gyllenhaal stand? I don't know. You're going to tune in to find out. He's up there, though. Definitely a top 10. Bush, the Bush and Company, senior and junior, they were into this stuff too, right? Remember when Bush Jr. told France like, hey, you better join the coalition of the willing and come in to invade Iraq, even though they had nothing to do with 9/11. Because I had visions of Gog and Magog. That's the end times battle, the spiritual battle. I'm telling you, these people believe it hook, line, and sinker. And they run our world, these psychopaths. And Trump presently pushing the same religious war very hard, which we're going to cover in this series, okay? Newsweek had an article titled, Trump will start the end of the world, claim evangelicals who support him. Want to know when that was written? 2018. Then on December 6th, that same year of that news article, Trump officially recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and opens a U.S. embassy there, which was a big to-do at the time, right? So let's fast forward to today, World War III. What's happening? And Professor Yang, who, look, there's a lot of criticisms about Professor Yang, and I agree with those. I've seen Hidden America talks about how he's got these connections to being an intelligence agent or a foreign agent. Jay Dyer points out that he's heavy into Gnosticism, and all those things are true. I'm not saying, like, hey, he's a great guy and you should trust him. I'm just saying, like, I enjoy his videos, and I'd like to interview him someday. I think he's very good at what he does. Probably too good at what he does, to be honest. But like anyone else in this field, you know, sometimes you just gotta, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both. There you have it. So Professor Yang, I like him. The heart wants what it wants. You know, it's like Drake. The heart wants what it wants. I like Drake. Was he doing some problematic things? Absolutely. We all fall short of the glory of God. All right. Anyway, Professor Yang did a video on several videos on this topic, right? He calls it game theory. And I took notes as a framework for what I'm about to talk to you about. Okay. Is he a Gnostic? Okay, yes, he's a Gnostic. Are there several mistakes that I find in some of his work? Sure, yes, okay. But I like his videos. And I double-checked some of the stuff in here that matters. Like, one example, right? He talks about the GCC, and his definition of it is incorrect. That doesn't mean he's wrong about everything. He flubbed that, all right? Okay. Sometimes I flub. So here we go. Let's just talk about what's going on. And like I said, I kind of altered some of the stuff, relooked it up, fact-checked it a little bit, okay? Iran, which I'm going to interchangeably use the word Iran and Iran. I'm going to say it differently because I'm still trying to lock it in that it's Iran. I grew up watching the Iron Sheik, and he was from Iran. I should have had that locked in as a kid. Anyway, Iran is a big history to consider here. So when you talk about Islam and Muslims, most Muslims are called Sunni Muslims, right? If you look it up, it's about 85 to 90%. So damn near all of them, right? But Iran is unique because it's the opposite. It's mostly Shia, which is the typical minority. So it's like 90 to 95% in Iran are Shia. You know, so the Shia, like, globally are kind of the underdogs, right? So in USA and its greatest ally attack Iran and kill the Ayatollah leader of Iran, what do you think the Shia Muslims are going to do? They're going to say this was a martyrdom, and they're going to easily flip that into a religious war, a jihad, to inspire all the Shia across the globe to fight back. Okay? They're going to fight back, okay? And you think I'm joking about this Professor Yang adoration? I'm shopping for a whiteboard, an interactive whiteboard, because I'm gonna start doing it too. I think it's good. I think it's a great way to consume the information. Right now, I do these YouTube videos, or tier two if you're on my supporter feeds, and I make the videos and I put the images of what I'm talking about, and it's very helpful. But I thought, man, it'd be cool, and I don't know if I have the time to do it. It'd be cool to like build out lectures and like circle things and write things down. Like, this is what you need to pay attention to, you know. We'll see. Anyway, the implication is that in the regions near all this fighting going on, you've got the GCC, which stands for the Gulf Cooperation Council. I don't remember what Yang called it. Oh, and also, he's not even a professor, I don't think. He's got like a bachelor's in fine arts or some stuff. I'm going to start calling it Dr. I'm going to rebrand the channel Dr. Wise Hop. teaches the occult symbolism. And I'm gonna wear one, I'm gonna wear the square graduate hat and my ropes. I graduated with honors, 3.9 GPA, no big deal. And I got all these ropes. I forget what they call them. Like when you get all the all these honor societies, I was in like four of them. I got all these badass ropes. I showed up to graduation. I was like, "What now, fools? I'm flexing with all the colors. I'm gonna wear the full robe for at least the first episode if I ever do this." So Professor, quote unquote, Yang, talked about the GCC, and the GCC is where we're gonna get into a real problem, because in this area where all the fighting is happening between Iran and the Strait of Hormuz, you've got all these countries like the GCC, which is a composite of Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and UAE, which is where Dubai is. And if all those ring a bell, it's because we have a heavy military presence there, a military bases all over that area in the Persian Gulf, right? And all of them line up to this body of water called the Strait of Hormuz, which if you cross that very thin, narrow strait, you are in Iran. You're on the mountains of Iran, okay? And the Strait of Hormuz is important because it's the center of the world, and 20% of the world's oil flows through this strait. And you probably think, well, 20%, that's not that big of a deal. It is, because we run on a supply and demand system, and then you got OPEC controlling production of oil. And just know that if you lose 20% of the oil, it's not going to be like, oh, gas is 20% higher. Like, it has this ripple effect and does all this other crazy stuff. It means gas is going to like quadruple or whatever, right? I don't know what the answer is there, but this oil apparent that they that goes through the strait goes to China, South Korea, Japan, India, right? Okay. And Yang says that the Japanese economy will completely collapse in 8 months if this thing doesn't sort out. 8 months. We're already a month in. Which is probably why Japan came to the White House in America. Remember that? And Trump said, "Nobody knows surprises like Japan. Why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor?" What a nut. Oh, man. What's this guy going to say? You know what? We gave Biden a lot of grief for being loopy in his few final years, but, oh, we ain't seen nothing yet. Anyway, so you've got a lot of money and a lot of economies tied up in all of this stuff, basically, all right? And the GCC, those countries, they hate all of this. Like, they were just straight chilling. And now, because America and its greatest ally decided to provoke Iran, now we're not going to, and to play devil's advocate, the reason why, which shifts and changes depending on what day, apparently, as to why we did this, it's because they're supposedly building nukes and they're a big threat. I don't believe it. I could be wrong. What do I know? Anyway, the GCC countries, they're chilling, right? They're making money. They're kind of a weird blend, right? You've got this sort of traditional Muslim conservative kind of culture over there. But in these GCC countries, they're like, hey, let's get some of that American bread, dude. So that's why a lot of expats move there, and like they've got huge tourism bucks and all this stuff. But the problem is because the Strait of Hormuz is all jacked up, now they can't get food or water shipped in. Like, not just a little bit. Like, all of their food and water comes in through this strait because it's the desert, apparently. And the whole reason we have bases in the GCC is to protect the GCC. But things get complicated real quick when you start bombing Iran and they start retaliating and bombing the GCC, which was not something the GCC countries bargained for, right? Like I said, Dubai and these other places, they're a little bit of a capitalist version of the Middle East. Lots of people moved to Dubai because it's kind of like their experiment of like, hey, let's just throw a McDonald's in and see what happens, right? Dubai was the busiest airport in the world until this all started, okay? So that, I don't think they're much happy with this. The problem is the GCC kind of has their hand tied because they relied on their free military protection from the U.S., which we all pay for, by the way. And that's my beef with Europe. Like, I love Europe, you know? But they constantly dump on America, and they're like, oh, you stupid Americans, you don't have free health care. All you have is guns, and they're right. They're 100% correct with that, And I don't think that's nice. But the reason that they can afford to do all these social programs, because our asses are over there protecting them in general, right? I'm speaking in generalities here. So if we're like, okay, bet, let's get our own socialized medicine, we're going to have to close down all these bases because we can't afford all the things, right? So I just think that how are we going to navigate this? How are we going to navigate all these problems? Because if we're all, there's this globalized economy, this globalized structure, and everyone's connected. And then Trump comes in and he's like, oh, let's do tariffs. And now we're not globalizing anymore. Well, that's going to drive the cost of products up here in America, which is inflationary. Okay. Then he's like, oh, okay, we're going to bomb the Middle East. Well, guess what? Now I got to print more money to pay for all these bombs. You know what I mean? Everything's connected. Everyone, that, and that's the problem. That's the problem. It's not like people can just be like, oh, dumb America is over there bombing the Middle East. No, we all, we're all in this together, unfortunately, right? So there's all this tension. And the bigger implication is that the GCC, who was buds with America, was like playing along. And part of the deal was, okay, we'll get our free military stuff. But part of the deal was all the payments for the oil are going to have to be made in US dollars, right? Which is probably the motivation for why we were paying for their military defense. And Iran knows about all of these things. The US dollar, the world economies, the GCC. They're trying to run up the bill on America by launching all these cheap drones at these GCC countries, because that forces us as America to defend the GCC countries and retaliate with these super expensive Patriot missiles and defense systems, all right? Now, the Iran drones are pretty cheap. They can build hundreds a day. They're less than $50,000 each, $50,000 each. All right? It's like the price of a car. Well, a Patriot missile is $4 million each, and we send multiple of those up to intercept one of these $50,000 missiles, or drones, I should say. All right? Okay. That's like us throwing a mansion in Malibu at every one of their Toyota Corollas. You know what I mean? Like, how, what what are we doing? But the plan is to completely destroy Iran so there's nothing left. That's what they've said. How much is that going to cost? It's going to cost a lot. They also know that keeping that Strait of Hormuz all jacked up, Iran does, that this will jack up all this pressure to make us stop doing this from all these other countries. That's why, like I said, that's why Japan probably showed up at the White House the other day. And Iran, to add to this, has a mountain range where they put all of these drones and missiles and stuff, and they launch these attacks straight up on the GCC and these American bases, and they target oil fields and desalination plants. Because remember, GCC, they got no fresh water, and they're in a massive drought. So if you close the strait from incoming water and food shipments, and you destroy the desalination plants, it's done. Chat, are we cooked, chat? We're cooked. They're cooked. You can only live 3 days without water. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm Iran and I'm like trying to make this war end, I'm like, I'm taking out them desalination plants. I'm closing the Strait of Hormuz. It's a wrap, son. What are you going to do? You're going to airdrop Costco pallets of water? No. So the big goal for Iran is to destroy the entire American empire now, which can be done. You just mess with the GCC enough for them to stop taking US dollars for oil, which is all part of the BRICS thing. If you follow the BRICS stuff, this was the plan for a long time. I have a friend who's bullish on gold because he's like, oh my God, this BRICS thing is going to crash the US dollar. He's been saying it for years. And now I'm like, ugh, maybe. And the byproduct of all this is going to be that the GCC, if we piss them off enough, they're going to stop investing a lot of their money into the American stock market. And if they pull all their money from the stock market, that's another problem, because it's a huge problem. It's a ton of money. The U.S. economy would collapse and we would go into a depression if they pulled all their money out right now. If they were like, dude, we're tired of this. We're out of here. Now, another factor with all of this is our expanding national debt, which Trump and Elon Musk promised they were going to pay down. That's what they told you they were going to do, which I'm on board with that. I do think we need to be fiscally more responsible because the cost to service that debt is an insane amount. I don't know what it is exactly. I want to say it's like $1 trillion a year or something. It's insane. It's why our taxes go up the way they go up. Because we got to pay all these banking financial families and stuff for all the money we borrow. Remember, that's what Elon Musk was doing with the chainsaw, right? With Doge, yeah. Make comedy legal again. These guys are a bunch of jokers. And the deficit has gone up 10%. It's almost $40 trillion right now. It was like $36 trillion when Trump took office. Now it's like $40 trillion. Fact check that. It's in the ballpark there. And now they want even more money to pay for all these bombs. Right? They're doubling down on our bet with this war. They're sliding all the chips in on this. Now, the first attack we made on this whole thing was when we bombed a girls' school that killed 170 kids. It was triple tapped, which means they hit it once, they hit it twice, they hit it three times in a row. That was not a mistake, right? Killed 175 to 180 girls in the school. And the reports were conflicting. Who did it? Investigation ongoing. Whatever. They know who did it. Someone painted those targets. So we started with a massive child sacrifice, which is very curious when you recall what I was saying. Right before the war, Iran was protesting with the ball and the Moloch, right? With images of Trump and Bibi and the Epstein files, which the Epstein files are, you know, it's a lot of stuff about sacrificing kids. So we're already on some weird spiritual warfare ground here. And it's like we were saying, you know, it's like the elites are so brazen with this. I don't want to call them the elites. That's the big campaign is we don't call them elites anymore because that implies that they're better than us. What we call them, the rich psychopaths. Oh, you don't like it's like Iran was protesting and saying like, oh, you Americans like to sacrifice kids, huh? And it's like we responded by saying, oh, you have a problem that we sacrifice kids? How about we bomb 175 of them to show you who's boss, who's running things? Which is pretty appalling and dark, right? And if that doesn't appall you, if you still are like, Isaac, with your Trump derangement syndrome, I still can't believe people are commenting that. They think I got the Trump derangement syndrome. I got bad news for you. You might be in a cult, right? An Epstein child sacrifice cult. And this is a test of what you're willing to accept. You know? I think there's some weird test in all of this to see what they can get away with. And I think they can get away with a lot. I think we're led to believe that in America, it's like a lot of don't tread on me people and everyone's got guns and we're armed to the teeth. And that's always been the problem, right? That was the beauty of the Second Amendment in the Constitution because it tells you that, hey, you think you're going to pull some tyrant totalitarian nonsense? Well, you're going to have to take out 350 civilians at once. The problem is they've pacified us with social media and streaming stuff and hell, me talking to you on this podcast. They've pacified us, and we ain't doing nothing. We ain't doing nothing. Now, the talk about the only way forward, if you want to keep going down this path, is to put troops on the ground, which they're already talking about, or dropping nukes. It's the only way to win the war. Another option, or part of those options, is to bring in multiple other countries, which now literally makes it the World War, World War III, which Albert Pike prophesied that I talked about in 2023 with the End Times show, all right? Now, what about this Armageddon ritual talk, all right? Part one's going to be a lot of, like, factual basis for part two where we're going to get a little more into the occult stuff. To see that there was an organized agenda to do all this, to establish this battle, we got to look at the Heritage Foundation, who gave us Project 2025, but they also gave us Project Esther, which not so many people know about, right? And if you don't know who that is, the Heritage Foundation is this right-wing think tank. They came to prominence through our first Hollywood president, Ronald Reagan. And it was funded through Joseph Coors from the Coors Beer Company, who apparently was kind of a psycho. His brother William described him as, quote, a little bit right of Attila the Hun. Also, who funded the Heritage Foundation is Richard Mellon from the Mellon banking family. Right? The same. Yes. Is the Mellon family Illuminate confirmed? Yes. Right? They're heads of finance. They're not to be trusted. Matthew Mellon was dating RFK Jr.'s daughter and having dinner with Trump right before he died of a heart attack in Cancun after taking ayahuasca. And he was also in the Epstein files. I'm going to read to you from it. According to an anonymous email sent to Jeffrey Epstein, Mellon appeared in a video recording of an underage Epstein victim being abused. The sender of the email was trying to blackmail Epstein, demanding one Bitcoin in exchange for the video. Another Mellon, Christopher Mellon, is one of the most prominent architects of ufology. That's right. Associated with Tom DeLonge's To the Stars Academy, he was the assistant deputy secretary of defense and has over 20 years in the intelligence community. So we're already off to a strange start here, all right? And the Heritage Foundation has been front and center with virtually every right-wing politician from Reagan to the Bushes, even Clinton, who was actually very conservative when it came to welfare, who used the Heritage Foundation's outlines for welfare reform. They're very much into 9/11 and getting us into the Middle East, which was all part of like the PNAC stuff, separate organizations, which we all know the regime change efforts are very successful every time we do this, right? I'm being sarcastic. The Heritage also got into Trump's administration and got several of their people into his cabinet, people like Betsy DeVos. But the point is, it's like they're very conservative. They're very much the architects of conservatisms for the last 50 years, okay? So in April of 2023, they published this massive book called Project 2025 with all of their fantasies of what they want. And in it, they literally want to violate the Constitution and consolidate power into the executive branch. And I say that because the Constitution is clearly about the separation of powers, right? To avoid authoritarianism and giving too much power to one person, right? That's why you got an executive branch with the president. You've got the judicial branch with your Supreme Court. Then you got the legislative branch, which is your Senate and House of Representatives. Okay. They write the laws and they pass them. And there's a slew of right-wing ideas, of course, in the Project 2025. But the only one I'm interested in talking about for this series is that Dark Enlightenment style of consolidation of powers. And of course, when Trump was running, they were like, have you heard of this Project 2025? And he was like, no idea. And if you look up, there's people that track this stuff. Because there's, like I said, the Project 2025 book is like 900 pages. Roughly half of their goals have already been implemented in Trump's first year. So, of course, he's lying about that. Of course, he knows because all of those people are in bed with him, right? Russ Vought, who was the guy who wrote the Project 2025, is his boy, and he's got a position in the administration, right? And there's various things that you could see in the document, like wanting to invade Venezuela and Iran, right? Which seemed crazy a year ago. Oh, my God, no way. Yeah, it's happening. But what I want to focus in on a little bit more is Project Esther. That is the other document by the Heritage Foundation. Because a couple years ago, they were very concerned with all the pro-Palestinian protests at college campuses and so on. And they were like, hey, they're very upset about anti-Semitism, which is strange, right? That the Heritage Foundation is very, they say, you know, they even went as far as to say, you know, criticism of Israel is terrorism, which explains why Trump was unconstitutionally deporting people who were protesting Palestine, right? The judges said that they were unconstitutional. Now, and the whole, anyway, without going too deep into, but that's the gist of Project Esther was like, hey, anti-Semitism's on the rise. We need to make sure we stop that, including people that are protesting the genocide in the Middle East. Now, Esther is a big deal in Judaism and Kabbalah. Hence, Madonna, my Kabbalah queen, Madonna. I think Madonna was Jewish too, isn't she? Maybe not. Put her on the list too, if she is, of people that I love that are Jewish. Anyway, she has her Kabbalah name Esther. Britney shaved her head at Esther Salon, right? We're going to come back to Kabbalah in part two, but let's wrap up part one first, right? But we need to understand what the Book of Esther is from the Bible, all right? The Book of Esther, so the area where Israel is today is part of a contentious region called the Levant. And a long time ago, around 2300 BC, the world's first empire existed in this area of Mesopotamia. It was run by Sargon of Akkad. And this was called the Akkadian Empire. And after the collapse of this empire, it became the Neo-Sumerian region. But now we're at like 2100 BC. Then you had the old Babylonian Empire from 1900 to 1600 BC and so on. Fast forward to the Neo-Assyrian Empire from 911 BC. There's that number 911. That's kind of weird. 911 BC to 609 BC. And this is when the first Temple of Solomon was built. All right. Each empire, each region was always looking at the importance of the Levant for a variety of reasons, for trade and all these other things. All right. Now we're going to zoom in on the Neo-Babylonian Empire, which came about after that Neo-Assyrian Empire. King Nebuchadnezzar II conquers this kingdom of Judah, deports all these Jews to Babylon, destroys Jerusalem, burns the temple to the ground, okay? And it wasn't until the next empire, Achaemenid Persian Empire from 550 to 330 BC, when that was the one run by Cyrus the Great, King Cyrus, okay? That was when the Jews were allowed to return and rebuild the temple for that second time. Now, King Cyrus was this guy known for being truthful and tolerant and open-minded and was very honest, showed a lot of mercy. His empire was like the first global empire, the first time that we considered like, oh, empires can expand, right? And he was a big deal. Like the tomb of Cyrus is still in Iran today, all right? He was considered the world's greatest emperor or king by a lot of people. So when he takes over, he liberates the Jews from Babylon. And the reason he does this is because the Bible claims that God told King Cyrus to do this. Professor Yang talked about this, and he suggested another possibility is that the Israelites help fund King Cyrus's takeover of Babylon. I don't know where he gets that. That's what he said. And he also alludes to this idea of a manipulation with the divide and rule, right? You set up people in the Levant and support them, knowing that it's going to tick off a lot of other people around there, and it's going to cause a lot of tension and chaos. All right. Now, in this area is the province of Yehud.
All right.
And that's where the Jewish people were put, which is where the term Jew came about. Right. So these guys come back to this province of Yehud in the Levant, and they're like, hey, we're back. And there's already some Israelites there. And they're like, hey, we stayed. We're the real Israelites. And the people that show up, they're like, no, we are. Because the Israelites that stayed there, they assimilated and took on sort of pagan ideas. Whereas the ones that got exiled to Babylon, they were like, no, we're the original, like, monotheistic ones. So now there's this strife between the Israelites that stayed there and the ones that were sent away and came back. All right. And the ones that were in Babylon, they were more into Zoroastrian. They were surrounded by more Zoroastrianism stuff, which was more about monotheism. Okay. Anyway, King Cyrus is like, all right, I need you guys to go back to Jerusalem. You're going to rebuild the temple. And they show up and there's all this tension, but nonetheless, they're going to build the temple. And in the Bible, you've got the Book of Esther, and this is the story about Esther returning to Jerusalem as part of this escape from Babylon. But Esther was from a period after the first return. Doesn't really matter. Anyway, Esther was a big part of this story, though, okay? And Esther would go on to become the queen of King Xerxes, the king of the Achaemenid Empire after King Cyrus. Doesn't really matter. She was part of this group that returned to Jerusalem, okay? And she gets to Jerusalem. She reflects on what God wants wants to do now that she's back. And Esther is praising God for the forgiveness and letting them back in and so on, right? So these returning Israelites decide they should cleanse the area from these pagan Jews that stuck around, right? Because they're like, look, we're more pure. We stuck to the G code, and you guys did not. And then that's where the idea starts coming up, like procreating within this own sort of more quote unquote pure bloodlines. Really gets kind of weird, right? And this is supposedly where the root is of a lot, like modern day people apparently the Jewish people do not marry outside of their religion a lot, because this is kind of what the Torah warns about marrying outside the faith. And, you know, they advertise it as this whole, you know, we need to maintain the strong family and preserve tradition and language and identity and all this stuff, which, to play devil's advocate, like, you hear a lot of people talk like this, you know, the Germans and the Nazis said this kind of stuff too, right? And it gets into the topic of immigration with America and people that don't want immigration to happen because they're like, oh, it's going to change the way America is. And, you know, I think all that stuff's nonsense. I think I like diversity. So I think it's weird to isolate and, you know, I don't know. It's weird to be like, oh, I need to make sure I got my bloodline here. And it's like, well, I don't know. It seems kind of racist and bigoty in a way, right? Like, you can still preserve traditions and marry outside your bloodline. You know what I mean? Like, I married in, my wife is Greek, and I am not Greek at all. And in the Greek community, I was embraced. And because I was, you know, I'm a cool dude, I guess, right? But anyway, my point is like, you know, I was making lukumadas and like everyone, it's chill, man. Like, it was cool. I don't know. I just think it's weird to be like, well, no, it's got to be in the blood. Like, you would have no way of knowing. Anyway, point is like, this is all part of the tensions in the Levant at this point. And nonetheless, they proceed to rebuild the temple because King Cyrus is like, you're going to rebuild this temple. And in return, they're very loyal to Persia, and everyone around them is mad, right? And supposedly, this was a manipulation. Persia wanted to control the Levant for trade and such, so they put the people there to create enemies. Now everybody needs Persia to keep control because there's all these conflicts going on, right? And today there's conflicts there too with all these nations around them, and that's why America's over in the Middle East, right? We need to manage the conflict, keep things chill. Like, it's all just a trick. And they all know this. And the Jewish people eventually want to divorce from America, right? Because they want the independence not be used as pawns for the American Empire. But for now, we're all going to use each other for our own interests. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a tenuous relationship. And that's where we're going to pick up with part two next week, where we're going to look at Esther from the Kabbalistic frameworks, all right? We're going to look at false flags through a holiday known as Purim, and you're going to be shocked at how many false flags happen during Purim. Well, false flags, major events, we'll say, okay? We're going to talk about the Greater Israel Project. We're going to talk about very controversial figures called Sabbatai Zevi and Jacob Frank, which is way down at the bottom of the rabbit hole for a lot of folks. All right, because this is where we get into the concepts of secret societies making moves on a global scale to push for eschatology and these wars of, you know, Gog and Magog led by the Antichrist and all that stuff. And we're going to wrap up with all of the occult players involved in this massive ritual, right? All the people we've talked about all these years, Peter Thiel and Hegseth and BB and Donald Trump. And it's going to get crazy. It's going to get crazy. So stay subscribed to the show. I want to thank you for your time. And like I always say, and I mean it, till next time, Stay positive.